Hello and welcome to another episode of the County Cricket Podcast in association with our friends at Bear Cricket. I'm your host, Aaron, aka the Cricket Connoisseur, and on my left, as always, is my Lancashire co-host, Joe Nutsy Nuttall. So Joe, mate, how's your day been so far?
Yeah, all right, thanks. Obviously, the test matches, E5s, I've been watching a bit of that this morning, so it's finally always good to see Hasif Ahmed getting more runs. Obviously, him and Rory Burns getting another 100-run opening partnership. So, yeah, I'm glad England have found a good opening partnership. You know, obviously, Dom Sibley, I mean, it didn't work out for him at the moment, but to be honest, I'd never rule him out because I reckon one day I'll be back in the team because he's that kind of player. But for now, I think England have found the opening partnership for the Ashes. And I think, honestly, I think they'll do well in at the top of the order in the Ashes, despite Australia's incredible bowling attack. But it's going to be very interesting to see who does get over the line in that test, or if it is a draw. Personally, I still think India will win it. I think there'll be a bit of resistance from, obviously, Hamid and then from Root and Bairstow as well. But, yeah, I personally think India will end up winning that test just because Jadeja will be so key on the wicket. But, yeah, I mean, by the time you listen to this, you'll know who's won or if it was a draw. So this is complete speculation.
It is, Joe. It is, but isn't that the beauty of Test cricket? The fact that we don't know. We've had 5 days of Test cricket. It all comes down to this. This is potentially the series on the line as well. Let's not forget, two very, very evenly matched sides in this particular series. We've seen a brilliant performance from India at Lord's, a brilliant fight back from England at Headingley. And now at the Oval, after India was skittled for 191 on day one, We've bared witness to a brilliant, brilliant contest between two quality sides. So may the best team win, of course, Joe. We don't know. The future versions of ourselves will know in a few hours' time, of course, when the podcast itself is actually released. But no, this promises to be an absolutely thrilling day of Test match cricket at the Keir Oval. But Joe, of course, we aren't here to talk about the Test match, because as much as we could, you know, talk about the Test match in so, so much depth and talk about all the fantastic moments we've seen in this series so far, we are here to actually record our first County Championship Divisional Round wrap-up show of 2021. So as all of you listeners will know by now, the group stages of the Championship have come to an end. We did all of our review shows. Of course, you can catch up with those on our website. But we are in the divisional stage of the 2021 County Championship. So before we get into the tables, of course, we do have our first results of this year's divisional stage, which were as follows. In Division 1, Nottinghamshire beat Somerset by an innings and 160 runs at the Cooper Associates County Ground in Taunton. Our two teams, Joe, in the TCCP Derby, Lancashire and Warwickshire played out a draw at Old Trafford. And finally, Hampshire and Yorkshire played out a thrilling draw at the Aegeus Bowl. Now, moving on to Division 2, of course, only two games taking place this week as a result of the abandonment of Durham versus Surrey due to some positive COVID-19 results. We saw Gloucestershire beat Northamptonshire by 6 wickets in Bristol, and Essex thrash Glamorgan by an innings and 74 runs in Sophia Gardens. Then moving on to our third and final division, Worcestershire beat Sussex by 6 wickets at New Road. Middlesex beat Derbyshire by 112 runs at Lords, and our eighth and final game of this week's divisional stage saw Kent beat Leicestershire by 132 runs at Grace Road. So how do those results shape up the preliminary tables of the 2021 County Championship divisional stage? So looking at Division 1, of course, this brings me great joy. I'm not sure how long this will last for, so I'm going to enjoy every single second of this. Currently top of Division 1 are Warwickshire on 33 points. In second are Joe's County of Lancashire on 28.5 points. In third, after that incredibly impressive victory over Somerset, Nottinghamshire find themselves in third on 28 points. In fourth are Somerset on 20.5 points. In fifth are Hampshire on 19.5 points. And sixth and final place in Division 1 are Yorkshire on 16.5 points. Now moving on to Division 2. Essex are currently top of Division 2 on 41 points. In second are Gloucestershire on 31 points. In third, due to the average points per game system being utilised in Division 2 as a result of that abandonment of Durham versus Surrey, Surrey are currently third on 13 points, but they're averaging 13 points per game. In fourth are Northants on 22 points, averaging 11 points per game. In fifth are Glamorgan on 14.5 points. And in sixth are Durham on 4 points. And moving on to Division 3, Worcestershire are currently top of Division 3 on 38.5 points. In second are Middlesex on 34 points. In third are Kent on 31 points. Fourth are Sussex on 17 points. Fifth are Leicester on 14.5 points. And sixth and bottom of Division 3 are Derbyshire on 13 points. So a very, very interesting mix so far in the divisional round, of course. Still three matches to go. Plenty of cricket still to be played. Lots more action. They are very, very preliminary tables so far. But Joe, I say we get into the analysis of this week's games because we saw some excellent games across all three divisions. And I think the best place to start is actually in Taunton with that incredible victory by Nottinghamshire, beating Somerset by an innings and 160 runs at the Cooper Associates County Ground. So Joe, before I give my 2 cents on this game, what did you make of this incredibly complete performance by the East Midlands County?
Well, I think Notts have really impressed, well, me personally, you know, since, I think, who was it against that their first win? Was it, I want to say, Derbyshire? Yeah, so, yeah, Notts have really impressed me since then. Obviously, they've not won a game for 2 years. They've had a lot of different players missing for whatever reason. Obviously, they have no Hamid now due to him being picked for England. They've recruited Sam Northeast, which I think is a great piece of business. I would have liked him at Langs until we went and signed Phil Salt. So, yeah, I mean, I called that months in advance. So that's obviously a great signing for Langs. But back to Notts anyway. I do think they've honestly, you know, just looked like a complete side this year. And I think if they were to win the championship, they deserve it. I think Luke Fletcher's been phenomenal for them. And I also been surprised by Brett Hutton as well, because he's someone who has never really, for me, found a place in a county side, as in he's never cemented his place down. Obviously, kind of, he was at Northants for a bit as well, obviously. For me now, Brett Hutton is a key part of this Notts team. And as I say, he's really surprised me in a good way. And I think with the bat, Notts looking pretty good as well. It's important that you're scoring runs right the way through. And right the way through from kind of like six down, everyone was contributing. Obviously, the top order, that's a little bit different because, you know, they seem to contribute every game right now for Notts. But from like kind of six down, everyone has been doing well. So I think it's really impressive by Notts. And also Ben Duckett as well for me has been really, really good. Obviously filling in for Hasib Hamid, who's now with England. I think Ben Duckett's done a great job. I know we didn't talk about the 100, but he did have a good 100. So he's in good form. And he's carried on that. He's carried on that against Langs this week as well, scoring a good 50. So I think Ben Duckett's done a good job at the top of the order.
100%, Joe. With regards to Notts, absolutely sensational. And I'm glad that you mentioned Brett Hutton, Joe, because I feel like he has gone under the radar, actually. And he has been an integral part behind Notts' success so far this season. If we look at Nottinghamshire's bowling attack, and first and foremost, full credit to Luke Fletcher, the first bowler in the 2021 LV County Championship to reach the 50-wicket mark. He's got 55 wickets at 12.60 as an average. Dane Patterson, 37 wickets at 20.56. And Brett Hutton has 18 at 21.33. So this Notts attack is very, very potent. And they were absolutely brilliant. That's the only way that I can describe them in this particular game. Absolutely unstoppable. But with regards to Somerset, Joe, what did you make of their performance? Because I'm going to be honest, it seemed a bit rusty from Somerset, at least from what I was watching. I feel like with both bat and ball in hand, there could have been things which could have been better, in particular the application of the second innings. I feel like they didn't really play that seam attack brilliantly. That is just my personal opinion on this, but I don't know. They just felt like something with Somerset this week was missing. Would you agree with that, Joe?
Yeah, I think they did. I think, you know, you look to, there's certain players in the Somerset batting lineup who you look to. Obviously, Steve Davis at the top of the order, hugely experienced, great cricketer. Didn't really fire this week. And obviously, he's not played much cricket recently. Because of the quarterfinals, he didn't play in that against Langs. So I guess there's potentially a loss of form almost there for Davis. And then, you know, looking down the order, Abel didn't really fire. I know he got 35, but realistically, for Abel's standard, it's not incredible. Hildreth even, you know, didn't really get many. And again, then you kind of come into the point where, I mentioned this with Notts, you're kind of relying on the tail. And that's not really what Somerset needed. I know you've got the likes of Jack Leach, but in the first innings, for example, the tail didn't really offer much resistance. And then in the second innings, you know, you've got Leach 35, Davey 20 out, and DeLonga 36, which is great. But it's not great when, you know, you're relying on those guys because the top order hasn't got any runs. And whereas Notts' top order did get runs, for example, Clark got 59, it's okay to have the tail contribute as well. I wouldn't really call Patterson White a tail ender, but you can count him as in the tail from eight down. So I think that's probably where Somerset kind of went wrong. I think you're right there. They didn't really fire, let's be honest. They didn't fire, and Somerset are a great team. You know, I think they've played some great cricket over the last few years and have been unlucky not to win the title. But as I say, they didn't really fire. And right from, you know, Steve Davies not getting any runs because he's not really played much cricket recently, let's be honest, that kind of, you know, almost had a domino effect on the other top order. So, yeah, it's hard, but I think Somerset are a great team. I think they'll be there or thereabouts this year, actually. I know they've lost. I know that kind of has an impact, but at the end of the day, they still have games that they can win. So I do think they'll be there or thereabouts. I do think the likes of Davies will fire. I do think the likes of Hildreth will fire, and Banton as well. I really, really want Tom Banton to get Red Bull runs, because I would love to see him play Test cricket for England one day. I don't know if that's realistic, but personally, I'd love to see it happen one day because he's a great player as well. So, yeah, we'll see what happens with that. But as I say, I think if Davies, Hildreth, Abel, those kind of guys get some runs, it's fine for the tail to get runs as well. But you can't be relying on the likes of Leach and Belanger and Davey.
Very, very true, Joe. And I do agree with that point. I feel like with Somerset, it was a pretty poor start, let's be honest, to the divisional stage. But they've got calibre. They've got quality in that team. This is a team that we know really are one of the finest Red Bull outfits in the entire country. So I have no doubt that they'll come back stronger. I mean, at the moment, they are actually struggling a little bit in Yorkshire, up at Scarborough, but it is Somerset. They're a team with a lot of fight, a lot of grit, a lot of character. So we'll have to wait and see how the West Country outfit do. But just before we move on to our next game, Joe, of course, the first TCCP derby, and of course the last in this year's County Championship. Just one final mention from that game, Liam Patterson-White. What a fantastic innings that was. Maiden first-class century set that innings up superbly for Nottinghamshire. And to be honest, he's had a breakthrough season, to say the least. He has been absolutely outstanding across formats. You look at him so far, 424 runs at 30.28, including that 101 against Somerset at the Cooper Associates County Ground. And then with the ball as well, 17 handy wickets at 36.58. Liam Patterson-White really is someone to watch out for. The guy has got an incredibly high ceiling. So positive signs for Liam Patterson-White, positive signs for Notts. I think it was a bit of a dampener, to be honest, for Somerset. And I feel like Somerset's fans' expectations were a lot higher. But again, both sides are very, very good, more than capable of bouncing back. And yeah, to be honest, should be an interesting end to the season for Somerset with both finals day, of course, and the rest of the divisional stage. But moving on from Somerset Notts then, Joe, let's of course talk about our two counties, Lancashire and Warwickshire, because this game ended, unfortunately, in a bit of a draw. Which, Joe, are you disappointed by that? Because to be honest, one of us wanted bragging rights, didn't we, at the end of this? We wanted to come onto the podcast, puffing our chest out, giving it the big stuff. But neither of us have really had that opportunity this season. The T20 Blast was rained off and then this has ended in a draw. But I'll start with you, mate. What did you make of this week's game up at Emirates Old Trafford?
Yeah, I just think it was a very batting friendly game, wasn't it? I know, obviously, Norwell got a fiver, but really, it was not a game for bowlers at all. I don't think either bowling attack was really up to its usual standard. Obviously, Lancs were missing, you can argue, Anderson, although he doesn't play as often. Luke Wood as well was missing for Lancs, which was a huge blow. And then Livingston obviously had to go off injured, which was a real shame. So he couldn't bowl in the first innings, and he bowled a lot in the second innings, obviously, but he couldn't really bowl in the first innings at all. And obviously Warwickshire were just not quite there. They didn't have Wokes. So that's the reason this game was ended in a draw. And it was a good draw, of course. It wasn't like one of those boring, you know, draws. It was an interesting draw with lots of runs. But I think it was very naive of Warwickshire as well. Their declaration was really, really naive. I think that was poor. If that was Lancs, and they declared on 239 with that lead, I would not be happy because there was a chance you could win the game. Of course, there's always a chance you can lose the game, but there's a chance you can win the game. And I don't know about you, but I think that was a naive declaration. They should have declared when they're led by, I don't know, 150 and tried to bowl Lancs out on a day four pitch, which you could do.
Absolutely no chance.
So you'd rather have the draw?
Yes. Obviously. It's one of our away games up at Old Trafford. And to be honest, that pitch was... It was really strange, wasn't it? Because I know that we've said there, Joe, a lot of runs, but let's be honest now, there were only certain runs from a few cricketers. Like the likes of Sam Hain, for example, scoring 118. Chris Benjamin, who, of course, I'll touch upon in a minute, scoring 127. And then, of course, Josh Bohanan with a masterful 170. But other than that, no one really kicked on other than those three. It was a pitch which had something in it. Of course, Matt Parkinson took a forfeit in the first innings. But I don't know. What did you make of the pitch? That's why I'm glad Warwickshire didn't declare. Because it was one of those pitches which if someone got in, and let's say that Lanx did have a 200-run target, I think they probably could have chased.
But then again, this is Lanx we're talking about. So, and I know I'd big Lanx up a lot, but I actually don't. I mean, we're missing Alex Davis for this game, and we're missing Jennings, and Livingston was half injured. So, and we're missing Croft. We didn't have Croft in the side. So, I think you can easily make a case for the fact that Lanx could have got bowled out. Look, that's just my opinion. I do genuinely think that was a bad declaration by Warwickshire. I think they could have won that game if they declared and bowled out. I think they would have bowled Lanx out, if I'm being perfectly honest. And I think that could come back to cost them. And I think they could look back on that and wish they'd declared. And at the end of the day, if you lose, then you lose. But at least you're giving it a shot, right? I genuinely think they would have had a good chance of winning that game. Actually, the whole game was quite bizarre. The pitch, I don't know if it was using a hybrid pitch or what, but the whole game was quite an odd one. And that showed by some of the batting performances. I mean, obviously, Benjamin and Hain, that was pretty incredible. And then apart from that, Warwickshire did pretty much nothing with the bat in the first innings, let's be honest, apart from those two. And similar with Lanx, really. Bohanan, a huge 117, and Villas got 67. And Wells got 45 as well. But apart from that, we only had Livingston in double figures. And I think it was one of the weirder games I've watched or seen in a while. And I don't really know what else to say other than that. And I do think Warwickshire would have won that game. Because like you say, if you get in, then you probably, Lanx had a good chance. But I think Warwickshire have to back themselves of looking at the Lanx first innings, bowling Lanx out. If they get Bohanan out cheaply, get Livingston out cheaply, get Villas out cheaply.
It's a big if though, isn't it?
But of course, but cricket's always an if. Cricket's always an if. It is. There's no sport. Cricket is the sport with the biggest, where you take big risks. And it can either pay off or doesn't. You can kind of hide it in other sports, but in cricket, there's nowhere to hide. So I think that's a risk Warwickshire should have taken. Because like I say, if it comes to the end of the season and they need however many points to get to the Bubblers Trophy final to win the county championship, and it turns out that if they declared they could have had a chance with that, you would take that, no?
Yeah, but we don't know. Like, this is the thing. At this stage, obviously, it is very, very early days. There are still three games, of course, of the four divisional stage matches. But I don't know, would you gamble 8 points when there is such a, you know, little room for
error?
But
at the end of the day, you still, either way, you don't win the title, right? So you either get the 8 points and win the title, or get in the Bobblers Trophy final, or you don't win the 8 points and you lose the game and you stay where you are. Or maybe drop one place down. So at the end of the day, you don't lose anything technically other than a place in the league that you can't get relegated from. And he's still one of the best, five or six teams in the country in Rebel cricket from this year. So I don't know, look at it from that perspective. But for me, Warwickshire should have declared. But Josh Bohanan, what a player. He should go to the Ashes. And Chris Benjamin is also a good cricketer. And so is Sam Hain.
I can definitely agree with those three choices, Joe. Yeah, Chris Benjamin. I mean, just our final little wrap-up on the TCCP derby. What an incredible find he has been. From Johannesburg, 50 on List A debut against Glamorgan at Sapphire Gardens, 60 not out against Northants. Edgbaston, I was there for that, as the Bears secured a quarter-final spot. And then 127 from 245 balls on county championship debut for the Bear and Ragged staff. This guy's special. There's just no other way of saying it. Whoever recruited him deserves a massive, massive bonus. They really do, because he just looks like such an adept cricketer. He looks like a prolific run scorer. And I know it's early days, of course, and it is his first season in county cricket proper, but I'll tell you what, we've got him on a 3-year deal now. Chris Benjamin really does look like a serious player. So, yeah, just one final big, massive shout-out to Benji. And, of course, to Liam Norwell as well. 6 for 57 on that pitch, I think, was absolutely magnificent. He's had a brilliant season, has been the real talisman of this Bears bowling attack, and yet again continues to impress. Him and Craig Miles really have come on leaps and bounds in the 2021 County Championship. So, of course, Joe, we have had our debate there. Should Warwick have declared earlier, yes or no? And of course, listeners, you can make your minds up on that as well. But the fact that the TCCB Derby, Joe, did end in a draw maybe is for the best. Because let's be honest,
potentially.
Could we have handled each other's bragging?
I don't know, but I'd rather Lancashire sort of won, of course.
And I would have preferred Warwickshire. So I think that's where we'll end that for this week's wrap-up show. But Joe, before we move on to the results from Division 2 for this week, let's talk about the third and final game from Division 1, which saw Hampshire and Yorkshire play out a thrilling draw at the Aegeus Bowl. Now, all in all, this was a relatively low-scoring affair, with the exception of Gary Balance's 101 from 86 balls, which was his 41st career first-class century. What an absolute legend of the county circuit Gary Balance has been over the years. Tom Curley-Cadmore scored 89 in the second innings, and George Hill also scored 55 in that innings. But other than that, there wasn't really, you know, many scores of real substance. This was more for the bowlers. But the real key thing here was the fourth and final day. Now, Joe, I'm not sure if you watched this, but I watched this live on the live stream and I took a screenshot of it and put it up on Twitter and I captured it, hang this up in the Louvre, because this really was one of the most brilliant fields, exceptional, outstanding, aesthetically pleasing field placements I've ever seen in county cricket. You had pretty much every single Yorkshire player around the bat. It was a sight to behold. It was absolutely beautiful for any spinners out there. But the reason behind this was because of Mason Crane's monumental effort as the night watchman. He came in on day three and produced 28 from 197 balls, which saw him stay at the crease for 250 minutes. That is an absolutely mammoth stay from a night watchman whose previous first-class best was also 28. So Mason Crane, take a bow. He was absolutely outstanding, showed so much character, so much fight, so much resolve in this game. And without his innings, let's face it, Joe, Hampshire probably would have been skittled. But with that being said, as soon as the likes of Mason Crane went, as soon as James Vince was dismissed by Jordan Thompson, who took 4-18 in that second innings, we had this brilliant, brilliant exchange in the final hour between Brad Weale, Kyle Abbott and the Yorkshire bowling attack. Now, the final five overs came, so 30 deliveries, and bad light means that Adam Lyth and Dom Best have to bowl these final deliveries. And what we saw was the real poetry in motion of cricket. It was the beauty of cricket. Men around the bat, light fading, crowd just on their feet, you know, really getting into the moment. And Brad Weale and Kyle Abbott saw off this absolute barrage of spin bowling from Best and Lyth to secure 8 valuable points for Hampshire at the Rose Bowl. Joe, what did you make of this incredible game? I must admit, that final day was some of the most thrilling and gripping Red Bull cricket that I've seen all year. It really was. It was fantastic from both sides. Full credit to Hampshire for showing the resolve, the character, the determination, of course, on that final day to survive it. But also fair play to Yorkshire as well. They batted well, they bowled well. They'll be kicking themselves that they couldn't finish the job off. But I still think they did quite a good job in this particular encounter, Joe. So what did you make of this incredible game down on the South Coast?
Yeah, it was quite unique, as you say. You don't really get many finishes like that, to be honest. Obviously, Hampshire had no chance of winning the game. So, you know, as you say, for Crane to play like that, and then for Abbott and Weale to play like that as well, was just incredible. It was a really, really inspired performance, and I think that can only boost the Hampshire dressing room with full of confidence. I really do. I think that's going to be massive for them going forward. And I actually think it'll have the opposite effect on Yorkshire. The fact that they couldn't take that last wicket, I think that's be really, really disappointing for them. They had a decent attack as well, Yorkshire. You know, they obviously had Best, who bowled 33 overs as like the main spinner. And Dom Best is a good bowler. And I mean, he's played Test cricket, so he's clearly good enough to be in England's on England's radar. And yeah, I think that'll probably knock their confidence as a collective, the fact that they couldn't quite take that last Hampshire wicket.
It could, Joe. It could. But we'll have to wait and see. Of course, when we talk of momentum in cricket, it's a funny one, isn't it? Because it's something, it's a theme which pops up all over the place and then you know, momentum can shift like that, really in the click of fingers, the blink of an eye in an instant. So I don't know, we'll have to wait and see. But I definitely agree, Joe, that Hampshire will be the better, you know, better off of the two sides. That's 8 points gained as opposed to 8 points lost. Of course, if Abbott or Weale would have got out at the end. But what a brilliant, brilliant game of cricket. And this is why we love the county championship. You could see how much this meant to both sides, how much it meant to the fans, how much it meant to the people tuning in to the live stream as well. It was just pulsating, gripping, nerve-jangling, breathtaking, exciting cricket. And that is why Red Bull cricket really is the ultimate format of the game. And this game really personified and encapsulated that, in my personal opinion. So well done to both Yorkshire and Hampshire for providing us with some fantastic entertainment. And of course, I mentioned him before, but also congratulations to Gary Balance. 41 career first-class centuries. He's a prolific run scorer. We know Gary Balance. He's used to scoring 1,000-plus runs in county championship cricket year in, year out. But honestly, that was a fantastic innings and a Joe Nuttall kind of innings as well, wasn't it, Joe? 101 from 86 balls in Red Bull cricket, over 100 strike rate. So Gary Balance, take a bow. I thought he was absolutely fantastic in that second innings. But yeah, Joe.
Very un-Gary Balance-like innings, actually, I might point out.
Mm.
Never really see Gary Balance bat that quickly, do you? So fair play to him.
Oh, exactly. That's
a refreshing thing to see. No, like, not say he doesn't bat quickly, but he doesn't bat that quickly. You know, that's what you kind of expect to see from, I don't know, Johnny Bairstow or someone like that. or Liam Livingstone, but maybe not Gary Balance. But I mean, hey, showed in the T20 quarterfinals, he can whack a ball, so fair play.
He certainly can. And this is the key thing. It's funny you say that about T20. It was like he was playing T20 cricket. And this must be the first time I've ever seen a Gary Balance century with more sixes than fours. 7 sixes and 4 fours for Gary Balance, former England Test cricketer, an absolute legend of Yorkshire cricket for the past decade. I love that innings. And I love the game. If you can't tell, I really am passionate about this game because it was so, so good. It was brilliant. And I will not be forgetting about it anytime soon. I doubt that Hampshire fans and Yorkshire fans will either, but great game of cricket, really gripping encounter. And I think a perfect way, Joe, to kind of wrap up this week's Division One talk, because that really did just encapsulate the beauty of the county championship in more ways than one. It was a fantastic game of cricket. So that's pretty much it from Division One then, Joe. And let's go on to Division Two. Now, of course, it's a shame that we didn't get to see Durham versus Surrey. And as a result of that, we do now have, you know, an average points per game system in Division Two, which could make it quite interesting with regards to the final standings. But in terms of this week's results, Joe, I say that we start down in Cardiff because Essex, we talked about a complete performance with Notts. This was up there as well from the 2019-2020 Bob Willis Trophy champions. They thrashed Glamorgan by an innings and 74 runs at Sapphire Gardens. And there's only one person, Joe, that we can talk about. And that is, of course, Shane Snater, a man who has actually appeared on quite a few of the review shows recently, has been in excellent form, the Zimbabwean-born Dutch seam bowler. And in this game, he was absolutely unreal. He took 6 for 39 from 11.5 overs in the first innings. And then he ran out Steve Rheingold with a really smart piece of fielding in the second. So, Joe, before we talk about the game in itself, how impressed were you with Shane Snater's performance in this game at Sapphire Gardens?
Yeah, I've talked about Shane Snater before. I think it was like on the one day shows. And for me, he just goes so under the radar in this Essex attack. If you look at the Essex attack, they obviously have Jamie Porter and Sam Cook, who also, by the way, bowled very well in this game as well.
He did.
Especially in the second innings.
Did you see that delivery to Kieran Carlson? The nip back. It was an absolute jaffer. Oh, yeah. Great
brilliant
bit of bowling.
Brilliant bowler. So they obviously have those two, and obviously Simon Harmer as well. And I feel like Shane Snater, for me, is the one who goes right under the radar in that almost four-bowler attack. It's a bit like the Australia attack in a way. Obviously, maybe not quite as good as the Australia attack, with them being one of the best test attacks in the world. But it is a little bit like the Australia attack. You know, you have Porter and Cook as Cummins and Stark, and then Snater as Josh Hazlewood, who for me also goes under the radar quite a bit in a test match sense. And obviously you have Simon Harmer as Nathan Lyon. So yeah, for me, Shane Snater, 6 for 39, just blew Glamorgan out of the water. And that's what you want from, when you've got such a small bowling attack, which Essex do, because I know Tom Wesley bowled in the second innings, but realistically, they don't have many more bowlers. Paul Walter didn't bowl in the match at all, but they don't really have many like genuine all-rounders. Dan Lawrence obviously offers a little bit with the ball, but he did, again, didn't bowl in this match. So when you've got such a small bowling attack, a really concentrated bowling attack, it's vital that everyone contributes, and that's what happened in this game. Porter didn't take a wicket in the first innings, bowled very well though, and still took three in the second innings, whereas Snater only took one in the second innings and Harmer didn't take one at all. So again, for me, it's really important that, as I say, everyone contributes. And that's what you got. Harmer took three in the first innings as well. So everyone did really, really well for me. Everyone bowled very well right throughout the whole course of the game. And that's what you're looking for when you've got such a small ball in the top.
100%, Joe. It was a very clinical, ruthless and cutthroat performance, I'd say, from Essex. Very polished, very complete, as I mentioned earlier. And also, not just with the bowling, but also with the bat as well. Nick Brown, take a bow. That's all I'll say. 102 from 223 balls. A really assured, composed, compact innings this from the veteran top order batsman. And this also happened to be his 16th first class century. So Nick Brown, as I said, take a bow. Outstanding this week for the Southeastern County. But Joe, we mentioned there a lot about Essex, and rightfully so, and praised them and given them plenty of plaudits, because this was a very, very good performance from the defending champions, of course. But what did you make of Glamorgan? Because this week, I think it was very, very similar to Somerset. Again, it just didn't seem like things clicked this week. There seemed to be a little bit of rust. I don't know if it's almost the come down from the, you know, the jubilation and excitement of the 2021 Royal London One Day Cup, of course. But I don't know, there seemed to be a spark missing, didn't there? With both bat and ball in hand for Glam this week, with the exception of the likes of maybe Steve Rheingold, for example, Lucas Carey. I mean, they both impressed with the ball. And then, of course, you had Chris Cook with 47 not out in the second innings. But there just didn't seem to be that, I don't know, that combined performance, did there, with the two departments?
No, and I think for Glamorgan, they've obviously had a little bit of time off since the One Day Cup final, because they didn't play a T20 quarter final. So potentially that has something to do with it as well. But as you say, it probably maybe is a little bit of a come down from the final. I think every team would feel that, and that's why finals tend to be at the end of the season. You can kind of, you know, party hard and whatever, but Glamorgan, I assume, couldn't really do that because they still have cricket matches to win. So, as I say, they had time off, and as you say, they had, I guess, time to reflect on the final, and maybe that really hadn't sunk in yet. But a lot of the team really has stayed together. Obviously, Lloyd, Cook and Dan Dalthwaite were all in the 100, but everyone else played in the final. So, generally, it's going to be quite tricky to kind of focus on that. In my opinion, anyway, I would imagine it's quite tricky to focus on the next game when you've got that kind of buzzing around in your head. You've just won a professional cricket competition, and it's an incredible achievement. So, look, I think you can't really be too harsh on Glamorgan because they are the one-day champions.
Exactly, Joe. Exactly. They've achieved something which, for 17 years, no other Glamorgan side could. And that is, of course, winning a first 11 trophy in county cricket. So I think for Glamorgan fans, and of course Glam fans, feel free to disagree, of course. I don't want to speak on your behalf. But I'm not sure if this was, you know, me in that position, if my team had just won a trophy, and yes, we have a bit of an off game, I wouldn't really mind it. I think it's almost, you know, one off, you've got your bad performance out of the way, and then hopefully you rebuild as the rest of the stage does continue. But I just felt like in this game, it was a real golfing class, and Essex looked like a really complete side. They looked back to their best, to be honest. And Glamorgan, as I said, Joe, just looked a little bit rusty. But again, as you rightfully said, they haven't really played a lot of cricket recently at all since that One Day Cup final. So maybe it's a little bit of that. Maybe they just need to shake off the dustiness, perhaps. But of course, yeah, fantastic win for Essex in Division 2. And to be honest, Joe, do you think Essex will win Division 2? I fancy their chances, to be honest, to top the division.
Yeah, I'd imagine so. I'd be surprised if they don't. I think they're the best team in that division, without disrespect to the other teams. Just Essex are the reigning county champions. So, yeah, I was surprised that they didn't get into Division 1 purely based off their performances, because they were really poor, to be honest. So I'd imagine they'd win this competition, or this division, I should say.
Yeah, absolutely. But moving on to our second and final Division 2 game of the week, we saw Gloucestershire beat Northamptonshire by 6 wickets in Bristol. Now, this really was a game of two halves. for Gloucestershire and, of course, Northants as well, because in their first innings, Northants posted 327 runs as a result of a delightful 94 from 134 balls, courtesy of skipper Adam Rossington, as well as some handy cameos from the likes of Emilio Gay and Harry Goldston. Gloucestershire then got skittled for 191 all out in their first innings, only to return the favour and bowl Northants out for 129 runs in their second innings due to some incredible bowling from the likes of Ryan Higgins, who took 5 for 46, Tom Price, who took a 3-for, and Matt Taylor and Jared Warner, who complemented those two by taking one wicket apiece. This left Gloucestershire with a target of 266 runs to chase down, which was expertly taken down by the likes of Miles Hammond, who scored 94, and then the enterprising fifth wicket pairing of Tom Lace, who scored 67 out, and Graham Van Buren with his 53 and out put the icing on Gloucestershire's cake with an unbeaten 99-run match-winning partnership. So, as I said, Joe, this really was a game of two halves for both sides. At the end of day two, Northants really looked like the firm favourites of this. They'd torn through Gloucestershire, they'd had a fantastic first innings batting display, but they just lost their way in that second innings. And instead of having a 300-plus run target, 266 was always going to be chaseable in this game on that wicket at Bristol. So what did you make of this game, Joe? And of course, what did you make of the batting performances from the likes of Adam Rossington and Miles Hammond?
Yeah, I think, I'll start with Miles Hammond because he was on the winning side. So yeah, Miles Hammond, for me, I've never seen him play live, but I know you haven't. I've even really impressed with him when you have.
I mentioned it all the way back in 2019, didn't I, Joe?
There you go, yeah. So, for me, as I said, I've never seen him play live at a ground, but when I have seen him play on TV and whatever, he's always looked really impressive. I think his cover drive always really stands out to me. I think he's got a great cover drive. And it's great to see him getting runs, actually, at the top of the order. Obviously, that Gloucestershire team has got a lot of good cricketers in it, the likes of James Bracey, who unfortunately didn't really work out when he played for England, and he's been a bit short of runs recently. But again, he's a great player, and I have no doubt he will play for England one day. I don't know when, but I genuinely think he will again. Tom Lace is a great player. Obviously, Chris Dent is a great player. So I think they do have a really, really good team, Gloucestershire, certainly with the bat. And I think this Miles Hammond knock just really backs that up, to be honest. I really do. And this was not a high-scoring game at all, really. There was Gloucestershire bowled out for 191 and Northants bowled out for 129. So in reality, it wasn't the most high-scoring game in the world. But I don't think it mattered at the end of the day, because often low scorers make for a decent game. And it wasn't, you know, a dead low-scoring game, but in comparison to others, it was. So I think that was a great knock by Hammond and obviously by Adam Rossington, setting the tone for his side and really, really got his side to that 327, which was massive for them. Bonus points was really important for them, and he got his side up to a good total there. So, I think, again, Rossington for me is a player who I'm a big fan of, especially in white ball cricket. He hits the ball a long, long way. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, that was a brilliant knock of 94, a really, really good knock.
100%, Joe, it was. And of course, batting aside as well, I just wanted to give a quick mention to Ryan Higgins, because, again, he seems to go under the radar, but he's always in the wickets, whether it's Division 1, Division 2, no matter where he's playing and who he's playing for, he's just such a prolific wicket taker. And I look at his stats so far this season in the Championship, and he's on 45 wickets, an average of 21.31. He's currently the joint fourth leading wicket taker alongside Simon Harmer. And he's only played 11 games. Of course, he's missed one. So that's really, really impressive for Ryan Higgins. Had a fantastic game yet again in this encounter. And this Gloucestershire side, I think they'll be disappointed, to be honest, that they are in Division 2, because they were so, so close. They were leading Group 2 for so long and then lost the momentum as that group went along and ended up in Division 2, of course. But they've got some serious players, Joe. You mentioned the likes of Chris Dent, Tom Lace, for example, James Bracey, Miles Hammond, and of course the bowling attack as well, with the likes of Josh Shaw, Higgins, David Payne, Warner, Price. They've got so, so many quality individuals in that side. Of course, alongside Essex, I think Gloucestershire will also fancy their chances for a shot in the top two, if not the top spot, in Division 2. So incredibly impressive performance this from the glorious Gloucesters, showed a lot of resolve to fight back in such sensational fashion. And then for Northanshire, I think they'll be on the opposite side of that. I think they'll be incredibly, incredibly disappointed. They had this game by the scruff of the neck. You mentioned that brilliant knock by Adam Rossington, of course, the cameos from the likes of Medio Gay and Harry Goldston. And they seem to have this match in the bag. The points seem to be secured. And then that second innings, a capitulation. And of course, some brilliant bowling from the likes of Higgins, Price, for example, Taylor and Warner. But Northants will be kicking themselves after that. But hopefully, fingers crossed, they can get some rhythm back. They don't take this too hard on themselves. And they can fight back in Division 2. But I think this will be a pretty bitter pill to swallow, to be honest, for Northants. I feel like they should have won this game. But of course, still plenty of cricket to be played. And we will see how the rest of Division 2 plays out as the next few weeks come our way. But Joe, moving on from Division 2 then, let's go on to the third and final division. And I want to start at Grace Road first of all, Joe. And not necessarily with the cricket on the field, but just the scheme that was happening off of it, which was the Family Fun Day at Leicestershire County Cricket Club. What a brilliant initiative this was. They got thousands of families and young kids at Grace Road to watch a day of county championship cricket, which I think is a fantastic initiative. And I just wanted to start off this week's wrap-up of Division 3 by saying just how big of a fan I am of that scheme at Grace Road. I think it's brilliant. I think more clubs should, you know, invest in schemes like those for county championship cricket, because if you make it this day out for families and you have the cricket on, even if it's just on in the background for some of the more casual fans, you're developing interest. Okay, you are creating the next generation potentially of county cricket fans and Red Bull cricket fans as well. So just fair play to Leicestershire. Love the scheme. I hope it continues. And as I said, I do hope that other counties do look at that, look at its success and potentially replicate it in the years that follow. But in terms of the actual game on the pitch, Leicestershire fans, unfortunately, maybe not so impressed with the result on it, because Kent did beat the Foxes by 132 runs at Grace Road. And Joe, there's only one man that we can talk about first and foremost. The man, the myth, the legend, Mr. County Cricket himself, Darren Ian Stevens. His third county championship century of the season, the 37th career first-class ton of his illustrious county cricket career, and his 107 from just 70 balls, unbeaten by the way, so he has a nice red ink next to his name as well, a 152.85 strike rate, and it included 13 fours and six sixes. Now, you know I'm going to keep on banging this drum, and Joe, I'd love to know your thoughts, but Darren Stevens for England, it needs to happen. I don't care who it's against. I don't care if it's, you know, a major series, if it's a one-off test match. Darren Stevens deserves his chance in an England shirt. There is nothing that you can see statistically, and he might be 45 years of age, but he has been absolutely outstanding for Kent this season. Let me just read his stats for the non-believers out there. So with the bat in hand, Darren Stevens so far this season has scored 632 runs at 48.61 with an 82.83 strike rate, which includes three centuries and two 50s, 73 fours and 25 sixes. He's hit the most sixes in the entire county circuit so far in 2021. As if that wasn't enough, he is also Kent's leading wicket taker with 31 wickets at 20.54 and 2 5 wicket hauls. Joe, I know we mention him every single episode, and rightfully so. Darren Stevens really is the living embodiment of why we love county cricket, and he's an absolute legend, with a capital L, a capital E, a G, an E, an N, and a D. But at the end of the day, do you see him in an England shirt, or is it maybe just me being, you know, producing some fanciful thinking, per se?
Yeah, I honestly don't see him ever playing for England. I don't think he would, rightly or wrongly, I don't think he would ever be selected by Chris Silverwood. And I think another coach potentially would maybe look at him, but I don't think Chris Silverwood would ever select him. So, I mean, I do think that if you go off current form, he surely has to be up there, because England don't pick players off current form. So, you know, if you go off current form, and Darren Stevens has to be one of the players up there. There's only really four players in recent years, Hamid, Craig Overton, Dom Sibley and Ollie Robinson, who have been picked off current form. And some of them deserve to be in, of course, Joe Root, for example, Jimmy Anderson, Stuart Broad, Ben Stokes, even though he's not playing right now, but he would be playing. You know, those guys deserve to be in. Others don't necessarily. if you go off current form, Darren Stevens has to be up there. But as I say, I don't think he'd ever get picked to play because he doesn't fit the bill for England right now and what they like to incorporate into the side, if you like. So, yeah, look, I do think Stevens... I mean, I do think he's an exceptional cricketer, but he's a short-term option. And that's not what England need. England need long-term option. If he was 20 years younger, he'd be right in the team, without a doubt. But I don't know how he wasn't in the team when he was younger. But unfortunately, that's not the case. I do think he'd make a great coach, though. So maybe England are looking for a new coach. Who knows? Maybe he'll be the man one day. So I will say that. But I don't think he will get picked, no. Although it would be interesting to see what would happen. As you say, maybe they should arrange a one-off test.
Yes, they should.
All right, let's say England gets to the World Test Championship final. Darren Stevens is still playing. That's technically a one-off test.
He slots straight in.
Why not?
Until the day he retires, I will continue to bang the drum of hashtag Darren Stevens for England. He deserves it. I'm not being funny. I can understand 45, of course. You want long-term, you know, people for the team, but I still think he'd be a great option, especially in England. If it was for a one-off test match, make it happen. Make it happen, because he has just, you know, torn through the county circuit for years. He's been so reliable, so consistent for whichever county he's playing for. So one day, as I said, it might be my fanciful thinking, but I really do retain hope that one day we will see Darren Stevens in the three lines and a crown. And the day that that happens will be a fantastic day, not just for English cricket, but I think for the game of cricket as a whole. But with regards to the rest of this game, Joe, as well, just another person to mention from a Kent perspective, Matt Milnes, who, by the way, just first of all, congratulations to Matt Milnes. He became a capped Kent player, number 220. A very, very illustrious number for any Kent fans out there, of course. 220 players have been capped by the club. It's not a lot. So Matt Milnes, congratulations. That is an absolutely fantastic achievement. And he's been an excellent signing. And in this game, he took a fifer within the first 13 overs of the second innings, which was staggering. He just tore through Leicestershire like a hot knife through butter and ended up with outstanding match figures of 9 for 77. From 23 overs, which unsurprisingly are a career best for Matt Milnes. So in this game, Matt Milnes, brilliant, absolutely brilliant. I don't think there's much more we need to add with regards to the performance itself. I mean, the numbers pretty much speak for themselves with regards to just how potent and lethal Matt was in this particular encounter. But it was just the ease of which he tore through one of the stronger top orders in county cricket. And I know that some people go, oh, well, Leicestershire, you know, Division 3, but they have racked up a lot of runs. That hasn't necessarily been Leicestershire's downfall this season. They've got a lot of runs. It's just the wickets. It's combining the two departments to actually win games of cricket. But Leicestershire's top order are usually very, very strong. But in this particular game, their top six only scored 59 runs across both innings, which is uncharacteristically meagre, to say the least. I mean, that's probably an understatement. It's incredibly, incredibly low for a side which usually has a centurion at least in its top six. So that just is a testament to the absolute incredible skill of the Kent bowlers and their execution of their game plans in this particular game. But Joe, aside from Kent, what did you make of Leicestershire in this game? Because I mentioned there about the top six, they didn't necessarily fire. I don't think the bowling attack was necessarily incredible either from the running foxes. But you have to give a lot of credit to the likes of Ben Mike, who scored 70 from 52. Ed Barnes as well, who for a tail ender scored 92 unbeaten runs across both innings, 22 not out and 70 not out, which is staggering. Maybe he needs to be promoted up the order. That's all I'll say. And then Will Davis as well, scoring 42, batting at number 11. What did you make of the Foxes' performance at Grace Road this week?
To be honest, I think, again, it's similar to what I was saying before with Somerset, actually, with Leicestershire. They can't rely on their kind of, well, Mike batted at seven, so from seven down, Mike's not really a tail-ender and neither's Parkinson, but you can't really rely on seven down to get all your runs, and that's what happened. Nobody in the top six went into double figures in that second innings, and that's for me where they lost. Well, they're never really going to win, realistically, but that's where they didn't draw, if you like. So I think it was brilliant spirit and fight showed by Mike. Parkinson, Barnes, Wright and Davis, fair play to all them. They were, you know, brilliant fight, as I say, brilliant fighting spirit from them. But I do think that if Leicestershire do want to fire on all cylinders, as we've seen them do in certain competitions, obviously made the T20 quarterfinals last year, then, you know, their top six really does need to fire. And actually just today, Lewis Hill has got a ton. So already that's at least one player who has you know, scored runs. And I'm not saying that these players are bad at all, of course. I'm just saying this was just a one-off, it feels like. They've obviously lost Marcus Harris as well. So that's a big loss. And yeah, hopefully for Leicestershire, they can kind of re-find that that form that they had a few weeks ago.
Well, yeah, Joe, hopefully, fingers crossed, Leicestershire can go back to, you know, racking up the runs for fun, as they have done actually in this week's game, which, of course, we'll touch upon in next week's wrap-up show. But they do appear to have found some form again. And as I said, with that top six, they have been outstanding this season. The likes of Evans, Azad, Hill, Swindles, like that top six has been excellent for the Running Foxes. So I think, again, just an off game, one of those games that you just forget, push it to the back of the head and, you know, surge on for the rest of the competition. But a great, great victory for Kent, who, to be honest, have had some excellent weeks in county cricket, has to be said. Things are beginning to look a lot more positive for Kent in a season which, to be honest, started off incredibly, incredibly poorly. So fair play to Kent, fair play to the Horses. I think they've had a pretty good end to the season, to say the least. And of course, Kent fans will be hoping they can top that off with some good Division 3 performances and, of course, a victory at Edgbaston on finals day on the 18th of September. But Kent versus Leicestershire side then, Joe, let's talk about Worcestershire versus Sussex. Now, Worcestershire beat Sussex by 6 wickets in this game. But the key thing that I want to touch upon first and foremost, before we talk about the action on the pitch, is the average age of Sussex's starting 11, 19.6 years of age. Finn Hudson-Prentice was the oldest player on that pitch for Sussex, and he was 25 years of age. That for me was absolutely, it's mind-blowing. It really is. I mean, it's a testament to the incredible academy that Sussex have down in Hove, but not even 20 years of age. Their average age was younger than me, which is very, very scary to say the least. But Joe, what did you make of this game between Sussex and Worcestershire? Of course, an excellent run chase from the pairs, spearheaded by the man who is in so much form at the moment, Jake Libby, a name on everybody's lips, potentially a future England opener as well, if he can keep up this form for, you know, numerous seasons. Just how impressed were you with the game itself and, of course, Worcestershire's application of the run chase?
Well, I think Worcestershire, you know, really, to chase down 315 is a remarkable feat. I mean, it's only, what, like 50 less or 40 less than what England needs to chase in this test match. Just to kind of put it into a bit of context. So, yeah, I think Jake Libby's a great player. And I said at the start, I think England have found their opening pair for the Ashes. But I think Jake Libby's a great outside bet to go. Personally, for me, I would definitely get him on the plane. If anything, it's just good experience for him. He's still only a young player, so it's good experience for him. But if Hamid or Burns gets injured, then Jake Libby's a good replacement. I mean, he deserves it on current form. He definitely deserves it. So you'd have to say he's better than Zach Crawley at the moment, or in better form than Zach Crawley at the moment, I should say. And he's in better form than Dom Sibley at the moment. So if we're saying those two, Hamid, Burns and Jake Libby, are your five openers, or in your pool of openers.
And Alex Lees.
I don't see Alex Lees going, but I take your point. Again, I'm not saying he shouldn't go, but I don't see him getting picked. To be honest, I don't see them picking Jake Libby. I still think Zach Crawley will end up going. But I think he's a great outside shout. And for me, if Libby does go, then he thoroughly deserves it. I think he's been brilliant all year. But as you say, this Sussex team is quite incredible, really, with the age on it. I mean, as you say, Finn Hudson-Prentice is the oldest player, and he's 25.
Yeah.
It's crazy. But fair play. I mean, that says it all about Sussex's academy. So can't really ask for much more from the players that they're producing, and they definitely give youth a chance. And to be honest, I know they lost this game, but they still put up a good fight. It's not like they got bowled out for 50 and 100 or something like that, and they couldn't take a single Worcester wicket. They still scored a decent amount of runs. They still bowled Worcester out once. And considering their average age is, what, like 19, I think I saw? 19 and a half, something like that.
19.6.
Yeah, there you go. So, I mean, fair play.
100%, Joe. You have to give a lot of credit to an incredibly inexperienced Sussex side. And it's going to take time. Of course it is. But with that foundation being laid, with the likes of Jack Carson, Jamie Atkins, Sean Hunts, Henry Crokham, Daniel Ibrahim, Tom Haynes, who was captain as well at the age of just 22 years of age, they are laying the foundation, the groundwork for a very, very successful Red Bull side, I think, down in Sussex. I mean, of course, it's very early days. Players will take, you know, some players will come to the forefront straight away. Some will take longer to mature and develop into first-class cricketers. But the future looks so, so bright down on the south coast. It really does. And although they lost this game, fair play to Sussex for putting up a good fight. As you said, Joe, they'll be disappointed. They put up a really good target, 315 runs, but Worcestershire were just excellent. I must admit, Jake Libby really has been one of the, if not the most impressive batsmen so far in this year's County Championship. Of course, him and David Beddingham currently on the race to 1,000 runs, with David Beddingham from Durham currently in the lead. He's on 992 runs, so he only needs 8 runs to actually reach the 1,000 run mark. Jake Libby is on 953. So Jake Libby is still a little bit behind, but, you know, should reach that 1,000 run mark at some point. Still only 47 runs away from that 4-figure mark for Worcestershire this season. But honestly, he was brilliant during that run chase. He really did apply himself expertly. He made it look so, so easy. And again, he had some great, great support from the likes of Jack Haynes, who scored 62, a man who, again, I keep on mentioning on the podcast. Him, Dan Mousley, Rob Yates, three names to watch out for in the West Midlands. And then, of course, Brett D'Oliveira as well, finishing things off with a nice, flowing 56 not out. So a good game of cricket, I must admit. And I know a couple of people who were there at New Road, actually, across some of the 4 days, and they said it was a really, really entertaining game of cricket. So fair play to Worcestershire for chasing it down. Fair play to Sussex for giving those youngsters a chance, and of course the youngsters themselves for performing in this game. But yeah, good game of cricket. I must admit, a very, very entertaining 4-day encounter between the Pears and the Martlets. So Joe, moving on to our third and final Division 3 game of the week, we saw Middlesex beat Derbyshire by 112 runs at Lords. Now Middlesex, of course, actually, you know, we'll be talking about this next week in the review show, but they have just signed Mark Stoneman as well. So that is a fantastic piece of business. Him and Sam Robson, both former England openers, should shore up that top order, I think, for the Saxes heading into the foreseeable future. But in this game, Joe, I want to talk about one particular Middlesex batsman, and that is, of course, Robbie White. Born in London, has come through the Middlesex Academy, has had a really good season. In a season where Middlesex has struggled, Robbie White really has been a shining beacon in that middle order for the Saxes. And in this game, he finally scored his maiden first-class century. Joe, I'll start with you. How impressed were you with this piece of batting from Robbie White this week?
Yeah, I think Robbie White is definitely a player who, for me, has kind of gone under the radar with just general cricket fans, not necessarily like more hardcore cricket fans, but just general, you know, casual cricket fans. I don't think many people know about Robbie White, really, but I'd just say he's probably been Middlesex's player of the year. In my opinion, anyway, it's between him and a couple of other, Stevie Eskenazi, for example. But Robbie White, it's great to see him getting this 100. It's definitely a weight off his shoulders, because if you're, I'd imagine, if you're a top order county championship batter, which unfortunately I'm not, but it would be very good to be one, getting that first 100 is definitely something that would weigh on your mind, I'd imagine. So for a player to do that, it is brilliant. It's great to do, and to do it at your home ground as well. To do it, not any home ground, to do it at Lords is just incredible, to be honest. It really is. And I must say, all those Middlesex players, every single Middlesex player is so lucky to call Lords their home. They really, really are. And I genuinely think that Middlesex are a team that deserves to be fighting on all fronts. And I really hope one day they can get back to... they won the T20 Blast in, what, 2008 with Andrew Strauss as the captain. So I genuinely hope that one day that they can get back to that kind of form and the days of like the 90s and stuff like that. Because it'd be great to see, aside from Lords, winning stuff again, wouldn't it? Or I say aside from Lords, the side from Lords winning stuff. But yeah, back on Robbie White, obviously great, great ton from him. And, you know, really kind of held that Middlesex innings together, 282. He got 120 of it. So you can't really ask for much more from your number four, to be honest.
Exactly, Joe. And again, I've just been so impressed with him this season. You mentioned about him potentially being player of the season. He is their second leading run scorer behind Sam Robson. He scored 583 runs at 30.68, scored that century and 450 plus scores as well. I think he's been really, really impressive. So fair play to Robbie. You could see how much it meant to him as well. As I said, this is a century years in the making. And it was a brilliant knock. So Robbie White, take a bow. And I know the Middlesex faithful will be incredibly happy to have seen that live at Lords. In terms of the rest of the game, Joe, Toby Rowland-Jones, what a bowler. 5 for 36, carved through Derbyshire in that second innings to secure the victory for the Saxes at the home of cricket. But in terms of Derbyshire, Joe, again, it's just been one of those seasons, hasn't it? A very frustrating one with all the injuries. We've now got another injury, of course, at Derbyshire. Lewis Rees is undergoing shoulder surgery, so yet another setback. In what just seems to have been this succession of setbacks in the East Midlands so far this summer. But what did you make of their performance, Joe? Because other than Laius Deploy, to give him a lot of credit, did fight back brilliantly with an excellently crafted 90 for Derbyshire. And then you had some runs from Matt Critchley as well, and some wickets from Sam Connors, who has had an incredibly impressive season. Might I just add, Sam Connors really has had a breakthrough year for the Falcons in 2021, but they just didn't seem to be, you know, massively fighting in this encounter. They didn't seem to really take the impetus and have the initiative as opposed to Middlesex. They didn't seem to, you know, force home the advantage at any point in this particular four-day match. So, Joe, what have you made of this match from Derbyshire? And, of course, you know, the wider season as a whole. It's been quite a frustrating one, hasn't it, for the East Midlands side?
Yeah, so obviously for Derbyshire, it's not been an easy ride the last few years. They've had the achievement of getting to finals there. What year was that? 2018, something like 19. That? 2019. 2019, they made finals day, which is a great achievement for them. But they've really struggled. They've not won a trophy for a long, long time. And I really hope one day that they can kind of bounce back and get back into the swing of things almost. Because I do think the recruitment policy at Derbyshire is going kind of along the right lines. Obviously, Dustin Melton's just signed their new contracts, for example. They've obviously brought Brooke Guest in from Lancs. And they have generally just brought through some good players. They signed Lewis Deploy as well. They signed Lewis Rees. And then they brought through the likes of Matt Critchley as well. I mean, we know how good he is. Alex Hughes, another one who they brought through, who's a good player. So I do think Derbyshire are kind of going the right direction about it, but it's not really clicked for them yet. And I do think it'll take some time for them to click. But I mean, I just mentioned two there, Deploy and Critchley, who for me are brilliant players, both of them. I'm going to say this, Matt Critchley is someone who I'd love to see at Lancs, to be honest, one day. I'm sure you'd love to have him at Warwickshire, to be honest, as well. I think most counties would love him. I don't see him leaving Derbyshire, to be honest. I just think that's more of a wish than a something that I think will happen. If he was to leave, I think there'd be a lot of counties vying for him. But I don't see him leaving for a while, if at all. I do think he's there to stay. So, yeah, I think with Critchley and Deploy, they've got two fantastic players. And I think they're the two they need to build the team around. Them two and Lewis Rees as well at the top of the order. Those kind of three players, for me, they need to build the team around. So I think if those three players can stay fit and stay in form, then I think Derbyshire will have a good foundation to kind of kick on from.
Well, hopefully, Joe, because again, I mentioned this a lot on the podcast. I do like Derbyshire. I like the Ancora ground. I love the Derbyshire fans as well, because they're so passionate. They're so loyal to their county. And although Derbyshire aren't the biggest in terms of membership size, they really do have quality members who do deserve good cricket. So fingers crossed for Derbyshire. As you said, the signs are there. They just need things to click. And this season, it just hasn't. It's as simple as that. They've had a lot of injury concerns. Of course, they've had some massive defeats as well. I think back to the East Midlands derby at the Ancora against Notts. I mean, things just haven't gone their way this season, to be honest, in any of the three formats. So fingers crossed this is just a bit of a blip. Hopefully Derbyshire can regain some form heading into 2022 and beyond. But yeah, I think for the East Midlands County, 2021 it's turning into a season not to forget, but one to learn from. And of course, one to take lessons from heading into the future. But Joe, that does pretty much bring us to an end to today's wrap-up show for the 2021 County Championship. Do you just have any final words, mate? Or do you think we've covered everything for this week's episode?
No, I think that's pretty much everything covered. Just although it looks unlikely, hopefully Lancs can beat Notts this week. But as I said, I don't think that's going to happen. And hopefully England can beat India. But again, I don't see that happening. Because I think a draw or an India win, unfortunately, is the most likely results. But well, Hammy's still there, and Root is there, and Johnny is still to come, so you never know.
You never know, Joe, and I find it funny that you mentioned Lancashire right at the end, because, speak of the devil, Brett Hutton has just taken a fifer for Notts, and Lancashire 124 yeah. for seven, so I think that is a perfect poetic way to end this week's episode of the County Cricket Podcast. To all of our wonderful listeners out there, thank you so much for the support. We really do appreciate it here at TCCP, and of course, we've got plenty of content coming your way for the rest of the 2021 Championship, Finals Day, and of course, the off-season as well. Heading into 2021 and the start of 2022. So we are going absolutely nowhere. But that is it from me, from myself and Joe, for today's episode of TCCP. Thank you very much for tuning in. And as always, guys, we'll see you on the next one.